C1AN.
Number 7A.
Now, this afternoon, I would like to go over these various subjects which we have been considering yesterday afternoon and this morning, and just have a survey of what animal magnetism wants us to believe and how we could and can tackle this belief. One of the very first thing which the reader certainly remarks when reading this chapter is that one finds out that animal magnetism wants us to believe in something which really doesn't exist. And I would say that if we would define animal magnetism, which one really can define in many ways, that animal magnetism as the sum total of evil is really that which wants us to believe in something which is not. I think which is divinely not. So we can see that everything which is not in line with what we understand under the definition of God must be classified as non-existence, and therefore as an attempt of animal magnetism to believe in something which is divinely not. So, when reading the chapter, one can see how the elusiveness of animal magnetism is stressed time and time and time again. In this chapter, animal magnetism is really brought out as something which has only a so-called force, which she names as imagination, as not conclusive, as that which seems to be but which is not, as something deceptive, as illusion, as esoteric magic, as a mere negation. You can hear it's always the negative, the elusiveness, the seemingness, the deceptiveness of a thing. It's so-called, it's nothing, it's suppositional, it's a gaudy pretension, it's vainly, it's vain. So let's be clear that whenever we encounter something, be it a thought, a feeling, an act, an experience, or whatever it is, which is not in line with the Word of God, that we can classify it as animal magnetism that has an intent to make us believe in its reality and in its power. It's usually these two things which animal magnetism wants to make us believe, that it is real and that it has power. So any belief in something besides God as being real or as having power is animal magnetism. And this animal magnetism as some total really of evil, showing itself afterwards in all sorts of manifestation like sickness, death, accident, lack, and so on, that is just a belief. And what, if we go over the seven subjects, what is the argument of this belief? What, so to say, are the postulates from the point of view of animal magnetism, what animal magnetism wants us to believe? Well, in mind, animal magnetism wants us to believe that there exists an universe next to God, that there is a power, a force, a universe, an animus in the universe next to God. In earlier times, one did call it the devil or evil. Then second, animal magnetism wants us to believe that this force is not divine, but that it is animal in nature, that it has the most animal characteristics in nature. And then third, animal magnetism postulates and wants us to believe that this animal nature can be used indiscriminately for good and evil. That therefore the animal nature in us, in the individual, in the collective, in the people, in the nation, in the race, and so on, that these can be used for good and evil. And a good dictator makes use of that. And every good dictator makes use of that. But he always makes use of it for an evil purpose, in its final result. That's animal magnetism. The belief that one can use animal nature in oneself for an evil purpose. It's the belief, for instance, that the temper we have can be used for an evil act. The belief that our sensitiveness, which the one or the other may have, can be used for disrupting our success, breaking down our success, that it can be used for an evil act. That's animal magnetism. And how often do we accept that this exists? How often do we accept that our temper just has power over us and has power over acts and so on? Then, in principle, it is in the fourth stone, it is shown that animal magnetism wants us to believe that this animal power, which can be used for evil, is bigger, superior to good. That evil has more power than good. It's the counterfeit of spiritual power, that evil power is the reigning and governing and operating force in the universe. And we hear so often that saying, well, that evil is more powerful and that good can never compete with evil, and so on. That's animal magnetism. Then the fifth claim which animal magnetism puts forward to us is that it tries to make us believe that an evil force has the power to harm us, to persecute us, to kill us, to destroy us, to belie us, to bring us to a pitfall. That's the fifth argument. And somehow, I think, consciously and unconsciously, each one of us has sometimes that feeling that a lurking evil, that a lurking error is just ready to spring into action when we are not quite watchful, to spring into action and to drag us down. That's animal magnetism. It's a belief. It's not the reality. It's not the power. It's the belief. And then, in the sixth subject, animal magnetism puts forward the claim and the suggestion and wants us to make belief that truth or God allows evil to exist and that it does not sentence evil, that it lets evil go on and do its work. It's that old, old story, why does God allow wars to go on? Why does God allow sickness to go on? And so on. And theology answers it by saying, yes, God allows evil to go on. And that's the belief of animal magnetism, which wants us make to believe that God allows evil to go on and does not sentence it at once. That's the big subject of the prophet Habakkuk. If ever we want to have a good, fine exhibition of that question, does God allow evil to exist, we just have to read Habakkuk, who shows that in a sevenfold wonderful way and clarifies what is the answer to that. Here we have it also in the sixth subject. And then in the tone of love, in the seventh subject, there animal magnetism wants us to believe that God even sanctions evil. That it even sanctions evil. Well, these are the claims of animal magnetism, and if we are honest and just ponder them and think what these epitomes these claims mean, we will feel that in various ways these claims are being harbored in our thought and in our heart as realities, as real powers, as real evil powers. And then it is time to wake up and to handle it, and to handle it from the point of view of science, and to unmask these claims, and to see by unmasking these claims what is really the truth behind these claims. And so let us go through these seven subjects again and see what does Christian Science unmask in regard to these seven claims of animal magnetism. When we take away the mask, what true face, what true identity do we see if we unmask it? We can only unmask it, as we have seen, from the standpoint, really, that animal magnetism is elusive and imaginative and seeming and deceptive and suppositional, and that it is only a belief that we know and not the fact. That's where we have to start, that it is a belief and not a fact, that it is only that it exists really not in reality, that it doesn't exist in the universe, that this animal magnetism doesn't exist in the planets, nor in an animal, nor in the atmosphere, nor in a nation, but that it is something which is a mortal mentality, an erroneous mentality, an erroneous concept of God. And so let's see what this mortal mentality really is and what we find if we unmask it. In the first subject, what is this mortal mentality? There it is shown that this mortal mentality is not a fact, but an imagination, that it is elusive. That is shown there. That has been unmasked. That this, first of all, that this mortal mentality is not something which does exist in reality, but that it is imagination. So that all that which looked to Mesmer as a so-called magnetic force or fluid is therefore unmasked as the power of imagination. So that which Mesmer thought was an objectively existing material, magnetic fluid, is now unmasked as to be just the power of imagination. It's unmasked as a psychological power, as a mortally psychological power, the belief in esoteric magic. That has been unmasked there. In the second subject, we can ask ourselves, what is that mortal mentality in the second subject? And we saw that mortal mentality is that mentality which always negates the truth of being, the reality of being, the negating spirit in us, the negating animus in us. That's the mortal mentality. And therefore, what looks to be as real qualities, as real animal qualities, is therefore unmasked as not being animal qualities, but as a negation of spiritual qualities. So whenever we negate spiritual qualities, whenever we negate that we live and move and have our being in spiritual qualities, we negate those spiritual qualities, and that is animal magnetism. That is putting aside spiritual qualities, and therefore the negative of it are animal qualities. But these animal qualities are not realities. They are a negation of spiritual qualities. They don't exist as realities. But that has been unmasked. The consequences of it I will show later. Then in the third subject, We can ask, what is this mortal mentality? And it is shown that this mortal mentality is here depicted as a tendency in us to rule and dominate with animal qualities. That mortal mentality is that in us which says that our sense of our temper or our idiosyncrasies, our fears, our hesitation, our undecisiveness, or whatever it may be called, those false qualities, that they rule us and our surroundings, that they have the power to rule and to rule us and others. So what really looks as this most feared malicious mental practice really is unmasked as being nothing else but a lack in us of spiritual sense and spiritual understanding. See, if there is spiritual understanding and spiritual sense in us, then there is nothing in us which is of animal malicious quality, and therefore nothing in us that can rule and control us with those qualities. So we come to the fourth subject, and there, what is there unmasked? There we see that the mortal mentality, which looks like the belief that evil is more powerful than good, that evil is really the operative and dynamic power in being, that mentality is unmasked. So all that which looks like that evil has more power than good is unmasked. How? Through an understanding of us of the one principle of being. The answer to it is the oneness of the divine principle. That halfway impertinent knowledge always rests on two bases, on two principles of good and evil, by which evil is always stronger. But that only can exist and can have its influence on us as long as we don't unmask it and see that that is only a lack in us of a spiritual understanding of the divine principle which has always power, supreme power. So we don't have to blame some old devil who has more power than good in us. All that we have to blame is to see that within us we harbor a halfway impertinent knowledge instead of this one principle, and stick to that principle and trust that principle and never deviate from that principle. In the fifth subject, this mortal mentality is shown to be a belief in the possibility of the transference of mortal thought. That's the belief of animal magnetism, that we believe that there exists such a thing of thought transference, transference of evil thoughts, evil intentions, evil purposes, evil aims and means, and that can be transferred to us, and that we are made the instrument of this evil intent. It is the belief that there can exist in the universe of being a power that can persecute us, that can kill us, that is an enemy to us. Well, this mortal mentality, which is always delusive, nothing imaginary, just a negation, just a false quality, and so on, that this elusive mentality is unmasked the moment we begin to see that there is only one passing, one transference, namely that there is only one flow, the flow of life which only goes from God to man. If we see that there is only one relation of God to man, and we stick to that undivided relation of God to man, where we see that we are only under the influence and flow of God's blessing, and that nothing else but good can come to us. That unmasks that animal magnetism's belief in thought transference is just nothing. It's just hideous, just stupid, just a belief. Or in the sixth subject, this mortal mentality, which calls itself animal magnetism, and is putting forward his own nature and wants us to make us believe that it is an evil doer, that evil is active, that in this world of ours, everywhere, through every pore, evil is active. That's the belief of animal magnetism, that always some error is at work to hinder the march of truth. Well, therefore, what looks to be a situation in which God justifies evil and lets evil work and lets evil exist, what looks like that state really can be unmasked as nothing and elusive the moment we begin to acknowledge our true self-government and act rightly ourselves. She shows that men's rights are invaded when the divine order is interfered with, and that men's rights are self-government, reason, and conscience, that we have to get hold of this, of men's right, act rightly, and if we act rightly, then we unmask the belief that anything evil could have action and could be active. Then we fill our universe, our activities, our daily life with right action. And that unmasks the belief in evil action, because we can then no more be used for evil action. That's our answer, that error can act. The answer to it is that we act right. And lastly, in the last subject, this mortal mentality, which calls itself animal magnetism, and puts forward the claim and the argument and the suggestion that animal magnetism is our one enemy, that can be unmasked. And the moment we begin to see that that's what seems to be a condemnation and an enmity against God, and a condemnation, if we look through it from the point of view of love, and we begin to see that love never loses sight of loveliness, but at the same time that love is that which gives the divine penalty for every error, therefore, that all the condemnation there is going on is only that evil condemns itself, that an evildoer only condemns himself, that all the condemnation and enmity that goes on is only that evil is an enemy to itself and destroys itself and excludes itself from the kingdom of heaven. Then when we see that, then we see that nothing can stand in our way of salvation. So in this way, animal magnetism just is unmasked when we look at it from the point of view of truth and love. We take every one of these seven arguments and look at them and say, well, what is the truth about it? Now, animal magnetism is very often symbolized by the serpent. Like in the banner of the tribe of Dan, who Dan is interpreted in the glossary as animal magnetism, and the tribe of Dan had in its banner the symbol of the serpent. And right from the beginning of the Bible, the serpent stands as a symbol of animal magnetism, which at the end of Revelation is the big red dragon of malicious animal magnetism. And this big dragon has always one aim, namely to persecute the woman, the spiritual idea, the development of the spiritual idea. And this enmity between the woman and the serpent I think, is brought out so nicely when we compare the third part of spiritualism, which we have taken last time, which has seven subjects. And you remember perhaps that last time when we went through those seven subjects, we felt that those seven subjects presented the woman quality in us, which are necessary for the advancement of the spiritual idea. And when I came to animal magnetism and saw the seven arguments of animal magnetism as the serpent, I was quite surprised to find that these two, seven, make a wonderful comparison of the woman and the serpent. It is as if in spiritualism, in the third part, which showed the advancement of the spiritual idea, that only through spiritual sense we can advance spiritually and will advance spiritually, and that the spiritual ultimate cannot be hindered, that then when that woman quality is at work, that as it is shown in the Bible, that at once the serpent or the great red dragon springs into action in order to prevent this woman of giving birth to the child or of swallowing the child as soon as it is born. So, having shown in the last part of spiritualism the woman qualities which are necessary in us in order to go spiritward, animal magnetism as the serpent is always that which tries to hinder the advancement of the spiritual idea in us and in the world. So, even more therefore have we to be aware that we don't stop with the chapter on spiritualism, with that wonderful sense of womanhood, but that at the same time the woman must awake to the danger that is lurking by the wayside, where animal magnetism tries to kill the child as soon as it tries to be born. Mrs. Eddy says that so nicely in miscellaneous writing, where she says, by the law of opposites, after the truth of man had been demonstrated, the postulate of error must appear. And so it is, after the woman qualities have been shown, in the line of spiritual development, the postulates of animal magnetism must appear, and we must see it in order to see the argument of animal magnetism.